No one is a special snowflake. We may think we have our own individual ideas, but we're just stealing others' ideas. When we're born, we mimic exactly what the people around us do. It's hardwired into our bodies from evolution. As we grow up, we may start to experience different values and beliefs from what we originally heard from our family and friends. In this podcast, we will be studying identity and how it changes or doesn't change from the values taught by one's family. For this podcast, I've interviewed Angela Allen on her life growing up, how her childhood has led to who she is today, and what her own thoughts are about how people form identity.
I am Angela Allen. I'm 51 years old. I was born in Indiana. I spent the first 21 years of my life in Indiana, and then after college, relocated to Philadelphia.
What is your definition of identity?
I think that identity is how one views oneself and how others view you and the choices that you make in the way you live your life or the way you dress that tell people how you want to be viewed in the world. I also think that identity is made up of your personality and your values and your belief system and how you live your life.
Where do you think this sense of identity comes from?
Well, I think primarily it's the families that we're born into or that we're raised in. Certainly from our early childhood, I think the people that raise us, whether it's our parents or grandparents or aunts and uncles or whoever is in our family, is our primary influence up until, certainly at least till the time we go to school. And certainly one's community, you know, either the town that you live in or the city that you live in or a group that you are affiliated with or that you identify with or that you're a member of can be an influence on your identity.
Would you say that your family had a very key influence on your identity?
I definitely think my family did. You know, I grew up in the Midwest. I'm Caucasian. My parents are Caucasian. I grew up in a very, very white small town in Indiana. When I was born, I think there were 6,000 people in my town, which was a sort of essentially a suburb of Indianapolis. But Indiana at that time was very white. My hometown was very, very white. My parents were somewhat conservative. They identified as Republicans. They identified as Christians. So definitely those were my early influences. And I was exposed to very homogeneous groups growing up in a small conservative white town. So I didn't see a lot of religious diversity or racial diversity at all. Mm-hmm. In the first, at least 10 years of my life.
From a rather young age, Angela began to realize that the beliefs people held in her society, and especially in her family, were different from what she actually believed. As a child, when you were surrounded by, as you said, homogeneous groups, did you identify with many of these groups of people, or did you see yourself as something other than that?
Well, obviously my skin color blended in. I was white and I was among white people. So I definitely felt that I fit in and felt a part of those groups. But I was born in 1964. I was, by the late 60s, early 70s, exposed to things that were happening in the country. I felt a part of, my community, because that's all I'd ever known. But at the same time, I know that I also felt like I had differences in opinion, probably as early as 7 or 8 or 10, with my friends or with my family about different issues. And because of those strong feelings that I had that somewhat differed from the people around me, I felt like I was an outsider or that I didn't necessarily fit in. my view of the world differed somewhat from my friends, and they definitely differed from my dad's. My dad was a pretty strongly opinionated person. He was essentially a very racist, sexist, homophobic, anti-Semitic person, and he didn't make any bones about his views about, you know, those groups of people, and would make blanket bigoted statements about those groups of people on a pretty regular basis. And then, you know, after my dad would leave the room, having said some of those, you know, hateful things, my mom would pull my sister and I aside and say, you know, I don't believe those things that your father said. I wasn't raised to think that way. I don't think that, you know, X, Y, and Z, whatever my dad had said, you know, that black people are all on welfare or black people are lazy. So, yeah, I mean, I started to form opinions about how I didn't really want to believe what my dad was believing.
More of a moral identity than a personal self-identity.
I guess you could call it moral, political views. And then at some point, his opinions were so, you know, so strong. And as I got older, certainly when I was 6 and 7 and 8 and 9, I was quiet and I was sort of passive and meek, and I wasn't really in a position to, you know, go head to head with my dad, you know, in an argument or a debate about these things. But as I got older, as I approached adolescence, and I got more confident in my views and my ability to express my views, and so I started sort of questioning those, I think, when I was 7 or 8 or 9 or 10, and I started actually vocally expressing my disagreement with him about those things. And yes, that shaped how I viewed myself and how I viewed myself in relation to others and how I viewed the larger world. I wouldn't say necessarily I was, I don't know if the black sheep of the family always means that you're the one that doesn't, follow the rules. But I certainly was the one in my family that sort of broke the conventions and the rules in my family. As I got older, I think they kind of knew that I held different political views and views of the world, other than what they, I think, had hoped for me and what they had chosen for themselves.
When Angela entered college, she met Jennifer Norman. During her time in college, Angela realized she was gay and entered a relationship with Jennifer. For a while, Angela's relationship with Jennifer remained a secret that only a few other close friends knew about. Angela knew that her parents would not be happy if they found out about the relationship. To what extent does your family support you, support mainly your identity as a homosexual and the life choices that you've made?
Well, like I was saying, my mom, I don't know that she really supports it. I mean, I don't know how you define supporting it. She doesn't march in any marches, and she doesn't tell me she loves her gay daughter and things like that. She came to visit us last year, and that was a big step because she had never been in the house with when Jen and I had a relationship. One time my parents came to visit me and when Jen and I were living here in Philadelphia. It was shortly after we moved here. It was like in 1987 or 88. And they wouldn't come into the apartment that Jen and I shared. I mean, I don't know what they thought they were going to see, but they certainly didn't want to set foot in our apartment. By the time I was out of college, the fact that my parents did not accept that I was gay and didn't accept my relationship with Jen and didn't like Jen and didn't trust Jen, at some point I realized that, you know, this is who I was and that I needed to be true to myself. And, you know, that meant living who I felt I was inside. And if it went against what they believed in or what they were going to accept or embrace, then so be it.
For Angela, it was her relationship with her father and the values of her family that led her to new beliefs and a new identity. However, Angela also explained that her identity was with her all along, and that her relationship with her family only made her identity stronger.